true outcomes they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Want to win that score sheet? You're gonna want to stay with Three True Outcomes.
Howdy. Welcome once again to the Three True Outcomes Score Sheet Baseball Podcast, presented by Baseball Prospectus. This is the podcast where three friends chat about baseball, both real and fantasy, and give it a score sheet twist. I am your lovesick architect, Ian Lefkowitz, and I'm joined as always by my co-hosts. From Ann Arbor, he's legend, wait for it, Ben Murphy.
Hello.
And joining us from the nation capital,
brace yourselves.
It's Jared Sparkles.
Let's go to the mall today.
Thanks for tagging that. So that was a garbage ending, right?
It was pretty bad. I was not a fan.
Sorry, America.
Yeah. I just want to be on record as saying that I just watched it tonight, so I haven't officially made up my mind, but I don't think I'm nearly as down on it as you guys.
This is How I Met Your Mother, for anyone who had the good sense not to devote 9 years to that.
No, it was fun along the way. I still do not regret the time.
I can remember times you telling me that it was the best show on television.
Well, that might have been hyperbole. But you know what? In the first like 4 seasons or so, it was very good. There was probably a season in there where I could build an argument.
So we've got a lot of arguments to build today. We are going to discuss, some in-season conversations for the first time, including talking about ideas for the first supplemental draft coming up ahead. We're going to ask about some trade etiquette questions, and then we'll give you some information about who to start and who to sit in the week ahead. And then we'll get out of here. Before we do that, just a little bit of housekeeping as always. Feel free to head on over to iTunes, subscribe, follow the links from our Baseball Prospectus article, download us on Stitcher, tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell people who you don't care about. You know, see what they think. Please feel free to email us at scoresheet@baseballprospectus.com with any questions or feedback. I would say we are going to start opening the floor to any and all trade proposals. We really enjoy doing that. If you have ideas for trades, if you want to anonymously have a trade rated, send us the email, let us know if we should read it on the air, if you just want us to take a look. You can also follow us on Twitter at TTO Scoresheet, or comment in our weekly article. So guys, you know what I love?
Long walks on the beach.
Yeah, the regular season. Opening day.
Ooh. Ooh.
We're recording this in the afterglow of opening day. So we are going to be talking a little bit about some in-season work. And in particular, we know that especially in standard leagues, the first supplemental draft deadline is coming up. I guess for those of you who are in your first year playing score sheet, supplemental draft, there are, I believe, 5 in-season drafts. One each month, 2 rounds, where you get to draft some additional players, 2 additional players to fill out your roster. Obviously, if you have a custom league, that probably changes here or there. But it means that you have to stay on the ball, especially towards the deeper end of your of your roster pool, in order to help you compete or perhaps plan for the season ahead.
You can also wrangle a co-owner that pays way too much attention to all sorts of roster moves and the down roster events, and then coast to victory on their shoulders.
And don't forget, sound real pretty on a podcast. Before we get to some particular supplemental picks. So I think we have a general question to ask, and I'm going to read the whole question. It's from Eric. We actually held it a few weeks. It was originally asked during the draft, but I think it's an appropriate question for supplemental drafts as well. Eric asks, what is your opinion on drafting a third catcher versus drafting a 13th starting pitcher for your last draft pick in the initial draft or in the first supplemental rounds? Just in case of injury, I like to have both catchers from one team. Me too. Along with a catcher from another team. I'm okay with that. But my pitching has taken a hit due to injuries to Beckett. He should be fine, we hope. AJ Griffin and Mike Minor, along with the sketchy situations Danny Duffy and Tommy Hansen are currently in. Sadly, Tommy Hansen is no longer in a sketchy situation. That situation is called being an ex-Major League Baseball player.
I was going to say, he's dealing with sketchy talent.
Yeah. So Eric goes on to say he doesn't want to pass up value in a better spot for pitching depth to follow a strategy, the three-catcher strategy that's helped him in the past. He has Buster Posey, Ryan Hannigan. He's deciding between drafting a backup. He says Jose Molina or Hector Sanchez are possibilities, or drafting a starting pitcher like Jake Arrieta or Edison. I can't believe I am writing this, Volquez. I believe he's literally changed his name to Edison. I can't believe I am writing this, Volquez.
It's a good nickname.
Yeah. So he thinks Molina and Sanchez could provide great value in case of injuries to Posey or Hannigan. But Arrieta and Volquez have more upside and can provide a valuable trading piece later. So, late in the draft, do you want to go for a security blanket or a possible trading piece? Ben, you are our trade guru, so I'm going to throw it to you first.
So I guess...
How do you feel about
maybe
that?
Maybe I'm caught up on the specific catchers that he's picking because of his situation, but I don't feel like either one of those catchers would be worth having because... When you get to the point that you're playing those catchers, either your team is so good that they're going to win in spite of the injuries to both of your better catchers, or your team's not good enough. You'll either need to make a trade or you won't be able to salvage the season with Jose Molina as your primary catcher. I guess the same is true, but maybe to a lesser degree, or at least in my head is to a lesser degree in terms of the pitching situation. And I think with Posey especially, he represents such a huge value that if you're a contending team and he suffers an injury that, you know, threatens his playing time for the foreseeable future, you're going to want to either make a deal to replace him or make a deal to play for next year. And I don't know why drafting one of those real-life backup catchers, Molina or Sanchez, would really change that strategy. I do think that Arrieta or Volquez or someone of that ilk can help you stave off pitcher AAA enough to be at least serviceable to useful. And so I would probably go for the pitcher in this particular situation. I like to think that there might be some other options out there, but certainly of the choices given, I would probably pick either pitcher ahead of the catchers.
Okay. So you'd rather have that... I guess pitching depth or the chance of getting better talent.
Yeah, and I just don't see the value in the third catcher on a contending team. When you know, when the catchers that you're looking at are just going to be terrible. Like, it might be a toss up whether Jose Molina is going to out-hit catcher AAA. Especially if you're using him in a short stint, right?
He'll have tremendous fantasy catcher framing value.
Yes. For all of the simulations where it's counted, he will be a great framing catcher.
Jared, how about you? Do you see any potential to having a third catcher?
Well, first, as an Orioles fan, I'm not sure I'm comfortable talking about the upside of Jake Arrieta. But I guess I sort of disagree. And I mean, I guess maybe your point holds if you're talking about Jose Molina specifically. But I guess to me, I'm looking at it... who, at this point, which pick is more likely to be seeing playing time on your team? And if you've got two catchers of the same team and one of them gets hurt, then you're going to need another catcher to avoid AAA catcher. And, you know, maybe Jose Molina is about the same as AAA catcher, fine. But if you can find any other catcher, I think you're one injury away from seeing this third catcher get playing time. But if you're drafting a 13th starting pitcher, you're going to need to see a bunch of injuries, which obviously do happen to pitchers. But you're going to need to see a bunch of injuries happen before you get to Jake Arrieta or Edison Volquez. So I think if it's more likely that the catcher is going to see playing time, then that's who you should be drafting.
Yeah. Well, so, oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, sort of in the preface of the question, he's already suffered several pitching issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, Posey and Hannigan are on different teams, so... theoretically, they're both playing 5 or 6 days a week. Posey plays more than that on average, I think. So,
yeah, but I mean, the point's all is if one of them gets hurt, you're going to be need another catcher.
Right. Or and my question would be, doesn't that inherently make Jose Molina and Hector Sanchez, who would have the job if they get hurt, more interesting trading chips? Potentially.
Yeah, but I don't think you're going to get anything useful for Jose Molina. And if he's mm-hmm. worth anything, you're the one that's going to need him. So why would you trade him?
Well, if losing Posey frags your season, I guess.
Well, there aren't many teams that have Posey and could lose him and still win a championship.
Just our Dwayne Murphy team. Up top.
We can hope.
Inside baseball there.
I mean, if he goes down late enough in the season, maybe you could still recover yeah. from it.
But that's, I guess that's true. In that league where we do have Buster Posey, we actually did draft Hector Sanchez because I was behind the wheel. I personally do like the idea of drafting your backup catcher with the same team. I also do like the idea of drafting a third catcher. I guess it's sort of, I sort of have a different view than Ben because I think Ben sort of looks to trade first. I tend to look towards roster construction first. So generally my primary question during supplemental draft is like, who is the rarer talent? Which is an odd thing to say about Jose Molina, I grant you.
Well, but, he's got a rare talent.
But, you know, if you are in these deeper leagues where guys like this start to become an issue or start to become, you know, rosterable, then that's where I feel like you want to draft for the talent that you don't think you can get in a later supplemental.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Ben, I see your point that if Jake Arrieta or Edison Volquez or someone like that breaks out, you're going to be able to get more from them in trade than you're ever going to be able to get from Jose Molina or Hector Sanchez, even with injuries. So I see your point there, but I think I'd still go with the third catcher.
Right.
I think you're also
and Arrieta is more likely to break out, I guess.
I think the pitcher is also more likely to be useful for this team, or at least within like this context.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think in general you should try to roster three catchers. So I'm not really trying to advocate for just two catchers on the roster.
But it is a question of sort of where you want to put your depth. Because you have, right, if you have a catcher go down there, at bats tend to be irreplaceable. If you have middle infielders go down, you can't really replace them with outfielders. You could probably suffer a few injuries to your outfield. But then starting pitching is another situation where, you know, having a lack of depth will kill you.
Yeah, presumably so he's got like five pitchers that were slated to throw some number of innings for him that are now probably maybe 1.5 pitchers, maybe?
Right, or especially in the cases of like Griffin and Minor and even Josh Beckett, you know, they're coming back, or we expect them to come back, but they're going to miss April, and you could be caught short there. I guess it's a thorny question, but I feel like it's more likely that you'll find somebody of Edison Volquez's ability in a later supplemental if you need it than Jose Molina ability. Just in case anyone is listening to this and wondering, and in a regular fantasy league, these are the kinds of questions you're not going to get on the Tino podcast. There's no Dynasty League where you're debating the relative merit of Hector Sanchez and Edison Volquez. Only here. So do we have any more score sheet exclusive content?
But play a score sheet, it's fun, we swear.
Yeah. I mean, if these are the questions that torment you like they do me, this is the game for you. If not, just go to Scoresheet Draft Aid and pick the guy on Baseball Prospectus. Pick the guy with the number on top.
It's a winning strategy, I promise.
Yeah. I guess related to that, I did want to talk a little bit about opening day rosters. You know, for people who like, I believe the correct term is roster baiting.
Is that correct?
Proper.
Certainly not right.
Yes. But, you know, I think knowing who makes the opening day roster, at once very useful for a score sheet player, and also maybe a little bit of an unnecessary skill. I feel like, and I could be wrong, and you guys feel free to chime in. My sense is that there's a lot of buildup about who makes the opening day roster. And the players change so frequently that, you know, that players who look like they're going to have roster spots perhaps get overvalued compared to more talented players who are in the minor leagues at any given time.
Yeah, I would tend to agree.
I think that's true. And I think people, especially fans that are used to Roto or something more shallow, probably don't realize how much those low-end roster spots turn over. And I think once you start paying attention to them, then you start to notice the volatility there, like the natural churn that happens when, you know, extra infielders needed versus outfielder versus, you know, spot starter, that kind of stuff. So,
And just to clarify, when you're talking about Roto being shallow, you're referring to the depth of the league, not the people who participate in it.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, that's fair. Shots fired. We should really. Yeah, this is the closest our podcast is going to get to the morning zoo.
Yeah, no, I was reading, I think, Camden Chat, some Orioles blog, that's saying, like, it wasn't really even worth listing the 24th and 25th players on the Orioles roster because it'd probably change tomorrow anyway.
Well, it might be worth listing the 25th player on the Orioles roster. Jared, how do you feel about Delmon Young? Orioles opening day roster.
He's in the opening day lineup. It was a thing that happened, and even with Nick Markakis being in the lineups, there was still Delmon. I'm stunned. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, let's. I do want to talk about it seriously for a from a score sheet perspective. Is there any hope for Elman because there's no D?
Clever.
That setup, all that. It's a lot of work.
I mean, Duquette has shown an ability to pluck outfielders who seem to be going nowhere and make them hit for the Orioles. So I think he's going to get some chances to play. I think there is some upside there.
Yeah, I feel that way too, which is horrifying. And I realize I've horrified myself as well.
There's also upside to his weight.
Yeah.
Well,
I guess it's contingent on Nolan Reimold coming back healthy, right? And
Reimold's never been healthy.
So. Yeah, he's never been healthy. And isn't there another player hurt as well? Is Steve Pierce hurt, or am I?
I mean, Markakis was hurt.
Markakis was hurt.
He was questionable.
Was it Francisco Peguera? Well,
yeah, Peguera's on the DL, but I mean,
they'll just send him down. Yeah. So Delmon Young might be here a while.
Like I said, as Duquette, it wouldn't surprise me to see him cycle through these guys. But
I actually think he's a reasonable target early in Supplemental 1, especially in deeper leagues or AL leagues. Sorry, everyone.
I mean, there's that variety of Supplemental pick where you're patching for playing time, and if he's going to be playing, then he's a patch.
That's exactly it. I want to just go over some other patches. Who seem to have made the opening day rosters. Like I said, I think this is kind of an overrated trick, but it might be worth talking about for people who are making some decisions early. Let me go next to the New York Yankees. Do you guys enjoy the New York Yankees infield right now?
I love it.
Yeah, this waking nightmare of like AAA rostered and The Walking Dead. There are a couple players who made the opening day roster, I think, pretty unexpectedly. One of them we talked about earlier in the podcast, Dean Anna. And I do want to point him out again, especially now that he's made the opening day roster. This is somebody who is projected by many systems to out-hit Derek Jeter this year.
That's kind of a low bar, though.
Sure.
So is my boy, Mycerus Turris.
Okay, that was a side eye for those podcast listeners. But my feel, and I guess this is sort of contingent on Brendan Ryan coming back. I think once Ryan comes back, Anna probably goes down. But Jeter is not a notably healthy player at this point in his career. And maybe there's a chance he's on crutches through most of the season collecting surfboards or whatever he's going to get on that farewell tour.
You mean surfboards?
Surfboards, sorry.
There's a season preview component to the NSI recently, and they talked about, who is it? I think it was Verducci maybe, was talking about things that are hard to find. So it was like right-handed power, something else, and shortstops. And he listed like the best shortstop in the game, or shortstops, excuse me, in the game. There's like, you know, Hanley and Tulo and I forget who else. But of course, then like the last player on the list was Jeter. And I was like, oh, well.
It's hard to find a shortstop.
Yeah.
I do want to go to Dean Anna's left at this point and talk about another player who's been kicking around AAA for a very long time, Yonjervis Solarte.
Kazunhai.
Yeah.
thank you. Yonjervis is, I believe I saw him on the Minnesota Twins for a long time. I should probably have his baseball reference page up for this. Again, the Yankee situation is such that these players could have tremendous amounts of value, just as end-of-bench roster filler. I think Anna could actually be something more. You know, just to be clear, we're recording this relatively early in the week, so if any of these players appeal to you, kind of just put them in your bank and track them, maybe track them on Google News, track them on Roto-World, Roto-Wire, your service of choice, and you know, see if they fit on your supplemental roster.
I gotta say, I don't understand how the Yankees spend $200 million on their payroll, and they're like two guys on their 25-man roster who are Madden generated. Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
It's remarkable. Well, I mean, they saw Eduardo Nunez play defense. They're relying on Brian Roberts to be healthy for a full season. They're canny picks. I think Brian Cashman actually did a very good job of trawling through the minor league free agent pool. Actually, I don't think Anna was a minor league free agent. I believe the Yankees just traded for him outright or claimed him on waivers. But Solarte is definitely a minor league free agent. They did a good job of getting 26-year-olds. I think Scott Sizemore is another one who's in the minors right now. Let's shift before we get Yankee infected. I do want to talk about another player who made the opening day roster, I think a little bit of a surprise, who's always been one of our favorites, Brandon Guyer, outfielder for the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say, again, what'll happen to the Rays, because they do like doing some roster manipulation. But, you know, there's no one hurt right now. It just seems like he's going to stick. And I think we've always liked him to hit a little bit.
He was the guy that pinch ran for David DeJesus when he got hit in the foot yesterday.
That's...
Those all useful pinch run appearances.
Yeah. Could pick that up. I mean, you say that, but you know, Joe Maddon's somebody who's not afraid to use his bench a lot,
yeah,
and find good uses for a lot of players. And I think they could. Boy, so he was in that. He was in that trade for Matt Garza, along with Hak-Ju Lee, Chris Archer, Robinson Chirinos, and Sam Fuld.
Hmm.
Nice one, Andrew Freeman.
It's a long list of good trades Andrew Friedman's made.
But for me, he's actually pretty high on my list, especially, again, in deeper leagues. I think he projects very well in the score sheet draft aid that we've referred to a lot. And that's he's never shown an ability to hit in the majors yet, but it might just be a matter of time and circumstance, and hopefully now he starts to have one of those. I want to pivot to the National League briefly, talk about a player who made the big leagues made the opening day roster almost as an afterthought when Rafael Furcal got hurt. Derek Dietrich stepped in as the second baseman, despite... I think the Marlins may have actually forgotten about him at a certain point during spring training. You know, they're like calling up Rafael Furcal out of a year away, and Casey McGee from, I think, playing Call of Duty. Like, they've really... They really kind of beat around the bushes to try to avoid making Dietrich the starter, and it does look like he's going to start. Do you still feel like Dietrich at some point could be maybe even a like near keeper? I feel like he's a few years away from that potential.
That seems a bit high to me.
Yeah. I wouldn't expect that.
But he was a 23-year-old last year with a 85 OPS plus at second base. You know, it feels like in a case where they find the right situation. I think it's all academic because I don't think you'll be able to keep him at the end of this year. But I would take my chances with him.
If I had him, I would trade him to you for anything. You. Anything you would give me.
How about anything? He's a useful player.
Yeah.
Anything.
I mean, you know, like we said, we do like lefty hitting second baseman. You know, lefty hitting infielders can kind of take the bigger side of platoon if somebody does get injured. We'll see. I mean, Furcal should be back relatively soon, but again, if we're talking about Derek Jeter, Furcal is another player who does not have a tremendous record of health at the moment.
At the moment?
Ever?
Yeah.
So,
just in Jeter's defense, he was healthy for many, many years, and then he got old. I feel like Furcal has always been fragile.
Yes, that's very fair. In San Diego, another player I talked about a few weeks ago, Tommy Medica, who seems to be a Padres crush, made the major leagues. Again, can play. It took Kyle Blanks' job, actually. And Kyle Blanks, somebody who desperately needs a change of scenery. Hey, do you know any team who started Delmon Young on opening day?
What? No. That'd be ridiculous.
I know of at least one such team.
Yeah, so Medica has the job there now. Or a job.
And he was hitting in, like, the six hole, wasn't he? I was watching that game. He was pretty high in the lineup. I was surprised.
The Padres have a crush on him. I mean, Carlos Quentin's going to come back and take somebody's job. Xavier Nady also was resurrected.
X-Men.
Yeah, I know. I think Quentin comes back and takes Nady's job first. I mean, it's possible that Medica goes down because he has the option. But if you're looking for a bat, I think he's somebody who might be available in NL leagues. I mean, you never really want to take the guy in Petco, but you could play him a little higher on road weeks and lower on home weeks. And I think it feels like the Padres are somewhat committed to making him stick. Player I watched this week, actually, in Montreal, we'll get to that, Henry Mejia. I was frankly pretty floored that the Mets kept him as the fifth starter on their roster, because I was almost entirely sure that they would go with Daisuke Matsuzaka, because he's old, and you've heard his name before.
Weren't the Mets considering getting Abreu?
that's signed Bobby Abreu.
Oh my god.
Today being the Tuesday when we're recording this. I'm looking forward. I will be at City Field with my hit it here, Bobby Abreu sign. I'm waiting for Kyle Farnsworth to come in. This is going to be an entertaining game.
They're so bad.
poor David Wright.
There was a point at the Montreal game, again, we'll get to that, where I think Kyle Farnsworth relieved Jose Valverde. I was like, oh, God. You guys are really rooting, you guys are really sinking it for the home team here, aren't you? I don't know if Mejia is available in many leagues, but I did want to point him out as somebody who surprisingly made an opening day roster, and now probably has about as much value as I would think somebody like Eric Johnson, who's a sleeper who we've been talking about for much of the spring.
Yeah, you had mentioned Mejia, too, in the starting pitcher roundup.
Yeah, he still has some flaws. I mean, the walk rate is not under control. The injury risk is very real and very present. And there is a chance that the Mets could reverse their decision and sign Steve Traxel out of retirement next week. But, man, if you have him, I think that's a bonus, and it's time to just throw him into the lineup, especially against weaker weeks.
I think I would go with Levon Hernandez ahead of Steve Traxel.
Levon Hernandez retired this spring, which was very sad. I was hoping he would just hold off on that forever. Not play again, mind you. Just never retire. So there would always be a threat. Where you least expect it. I guess we could go on and talk about more specific players for supplemental drafts. We will in future weeks. If you have any idea, if you have any thoughts about your team or anyone who surprised you by making a roster, email us at scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com or leave a note in the comments. I'd be interested in, you know, getting reports from other people who watch all the teams and other people who follow one specific team very closely. I find those reports to be very valuable. And we'll do our best to share them widely. But I did want to talk about a broader question, you know. So we've talked a little bit about, getting ready for the opening day draft. But I think the opening day is also the start of trade season. So, Ben, again, trade guru, when do you think trade season really opens for you? Do you feel like you can trade for people? You can start putting out feelers for trades right away as soon as the season begins?
Yeah, I mean...
Go ahead.
I'll let you finish your question. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's okay. My question was weird and rambly.
Well, I can see where you're going, so I'll step in and I'll ramble, and then you can... jump in and Jared can correct me. So
it's the kind of professional podcast that you can only get here at Baseball Perspectives.
So, sorry, you know, I think for us and for most others, we're definitely open to trading during and before the spring draft even. So I think in terms of the season starting, we're looking at the performances that may change our expectations, right? And I think we could probably all agree that at this point, it's still too early in the season to really adjust our expectations from a player. Obviously, we're actually recording this like 2 days into the season. But even for the next couple of weeks, right, there's not really enough to go on. So I think there are a couple of reasons why I would be very comfortable making a trade. The first is pretty obvious injuries. We saw a bunch of spring training injuries. There could be a situation where you thought you had some depth and maybe the injuries piled up, or injuries combined with one guy not making the roster. You were really banking on that Daisuke Matsuzaka every 5 days rotation spot, and now you're in
a bind. You drafted Wilson Ramos expecting he would make it more than 1 day into the season this year.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's rough.
So obviously if you're filling an injury hole, that's an easy decision to make a trade. I think there's
Can I pause you there real quick? Yeah. I'm curious, since you're talking about injuries, something like Jose Reyes, who was put on the DL, it's probably only going to be for a couple weeks. Would he be someone that you would say, all right, let's try to get him, because I think whoever owns him might be skittish about him, and he might be a potential buy low candidate, or would he be a guy you target?
Yeah, so I think you can also look at it from the other way, but I'll answer your question. I think I'm definitely open to the opportunity of getting discounts on guys. I think in that case, you're going to want to look at your league and see, you know, you got to make sure that the guy that owns Reyes either isn't going to miss him or that you can make him whole. He might have depth enough to cover, or you have depth enough to make it up to him. I think anytime you feel like you can get a discount, you should. I think Reyes specifically may not be the greatest example because he's shown himself to be fairly injury prone. So you got to make sure you price in a lot of injury risk into the price that you pay to acquire him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on the flip side, you know, if you are the owner of Reyes, you could be looking to make a trade to fill the gap that maybe you didn't have enough depth for, or if you're convinced that he's never really going to be healthy, maybe it's a good opportunity to find somebody that's a little bit more optimistic. I think in any case, you're not necessarily adjusting your expectations in the case of Reyes because you probably had some injury concerns anyway. You probably didn't think it was going to come quite this quickly. But
So, you know, I think as somebody who's comfortable trading early and trading often, do you find it more difficult to find a willing trade partner in the first week of the season?
Yeah, I think you're looking at a lot of owners that are pretty happy with where their rosters are at. You know, one of the other items that I was going to mention in cases where I would make a trade, and this is an opportunity where you can find trade partners both ways, is if there's a guy that you had really hoped to land in the spring draft and somebody else snagged him from you, you know, going after the one that got away is an opportunity to start a discussion with another owner. And a lot of times we will sort of reach out to other owners in our leagues, and I think that's something that we've heard from you know, the other owners in the leagues that we're in. You know, hey, we really wanted to pick up Brad Miller, whomever. Looks like you guys have three guys that could play up the middle. Would you consider dealing him? Or, you know, that kind of thing. Not necessarily Brad Miller specifically, just an example.
But yes, Brad Miller.
But yeah, Brad Miller's a good guy to go get.
Just draft him.
And, you know, I think in that sense, it's too early to change expectations for what players are going to do for the season. But if there was a guy that you were already on, and you already have expectations that he's going to be valuable, then, you know, maybe it's an opportunity to talk trade. I think sometimes there are definitely a variety of owners that are hesitant to talk trade during the draft because they want to get to the end and feel like they have a sense of how their roster shakes out, rather than trading during the draft with some uncertainty. I think more owners are comfortable trading during the draft because they can sort of adjust as they go. If there's picks that are still yet to be made, they can trade from an area of depth or weakness and sort of balance things out. But every once in a while, you'll run into an owner that, you know, basically wants to finish his roster, make it nice and balanced, and then think about trades after that. I think the other instance that I would definitely be comfortable making a trade is if you've got a team that you know is not going to win the championship this year. I am not somebody who's real interested in saying that you made the playoffs for the sake of saying it. And I think we actually have a couple of instances on teams that we own this year where a series of circumstances unfolded and we sort of made the call that we weren't going to be able to win the league, and we decided to start pursuing future value. And I think early in the season, it's certainly quite reasonable to pursue that for future value in an ongoing way. A lot of times you'll run into that owner that has Reyes and is looking for a patch, and the guy that you drafted is sort of short-term value, Jimmy Rollins or something like that, and you can flip him, and you can pick up, you know, picks in the supplemental right after the June amateur draft, or, you know, prospects or picks next year, that kind of thing.
Do you feel like people who make the decision to sell early are at an advantage?
That's a good question. I think generally I prefer to sell earlier because I would rather try to set the market than try to meet the market that's set by others. I think you're running the risk of misjudging where the market should be if you sell early. So especially as the guy that, you know, in that example, maybe owns Rollins and is looking to move him, if you trade too early, you're probably not going to have as many buyers. So there might not be quite as much demand for the items that you're selling, and hence the price might be a little lower. And mm-hmm. you might not see the same sort of urgency in an owner that's maybe running into a little bit more dire straits than, you know, the first week can only put somebody so far behind where they started the season. Sometimes it's good to wait for some time to let things unfold and let guys sort of build up a certain sense of angst. I think there's definitely the emotional side to every owner that plays a part in making trades work or getting trades done that feel good for both parties because you are so eager to make something happen.
All right. Jared, do you have any?
No, I think that was helpful.
Yeah, I think if I had to summarize, it's basically don't overreact to a couple weeks of results and stick to your guns and trust your gut. So if you had a plan going into the main draft, then you can keep following it. And if not, you know, you're still sort of in wait-and-see mode.
Okay. Yeah, and if anyone has any specific ideas, again, that they want to run across, you know, we can talk about it anonymously on the podcast, or we can talk about it if you're not afraid like us to share our decisions with our many listeners. Don't worry.
I think it's obvious to everybody in our leagues what we were doing, because we weren't super shy about it.
Yeah. Sometimes I actually like making a strategy blatant. It lets people know what you're in for.
Yeah, it's a sort of self-advertisement, right? This is what I'm all about. Come at me, bro.
Yeah. And what we're all about is fun. And also thinking about players to start and sit for upcoming weeks.
That's a smooth transition.
The opposite of fun, right?
I am definitely all about coming up a list of players to start or sit.
Yeah, so when thinking about this podcast, you know, we do want to provide a service each week, and I think one of the things we can provide are, you know, looking at some of the players who have been rostered and deciding, trying to explain, you know, if some of them are worth starting or sitting in the week ahead. And I feel like this is something that we've carried over from fantasy baseball, but my impression of starting and sitting a player is that it's very different in score sheet. That when we're talking about in a score sheet context, we're probably not talking about the top player. So most of the start and sit articles that you read just aren't going to be relevant to you. And also, there are certain like weekly results, players who make two starts that just aren't going to be particularly germane to your situation. And, of course, because you're building a roster, it's going to be contingent on the other guys you have on your roster. So with all those caveats, maybe we'll talk about some players who can... who you might want to look at for a week ahead, and some players who you might want to give a rest or perhaps move lower in your order, at least. And I think in future weeks we may go around the circle. This week I have a bunch. Do you want to just prompt me so that I stop monologuing for a second?
Sure. this is what happens when you prepare too much.
Yeah.
So Ian... you sort of talked about what's more complicated. I know you were sort of telling us about, and I actually want you to sort of lead this off with the idea that you had in terms of a tool that would be beneficial to scoresheet owners in general, because I think that gives some insight into, you know, not just the idea, but the thought process that you have going into how you pick these players, so that outside of even these specific examples, owners can start to get thoughts of their own that maybe help them find players to target.
Oh, yeah. If anyone has any sense, and I think some of my teammates can actually do this, but if anybody has some programming sense, I would love to have a projected starting rotation for the remainder of the season. You know, I think we all understand that at a certain point, a probable pitcher becomes TBA. We get it. We've all followed baseball. We know, you know, there are rainouts and people get hurt and managers make weird decisions. And sometimes Colby Lewis is healthy and sometimes Colby Lewis is not. That said, why can't we just get rotation for the end of the season broken down in a spreadsheet by team with the player's handedness just prominently displayed in a graphic format? And why can't we do all of that while being licked by an adorable puppy, as one of our members is right now? I think it, you know, if there was just some graphical format, because you see a lot of things for the upcoming week, but, you know, here in score sheet, we want to plan for the rest of the season. You know, we have particular needs that are not appropriate for the general start sit conversation. So I would love for someone to design it.
So do you envision this having projected statistics or just sort of outlining the matchups and figuring out which ones are favorable based on, say, handedness of opponent and general splits?
I mean, ideally we'd run projections.
So, and this is something that I struggle with a little bit, but theoretically you have some overarching projection for the rest of the season or the season as a whole. How much are you willing to adjust that based on short-term factors like the handedness of the pitcher that's starting against you or that sort of thing?
I mean, the thing about score sheet is that it makes it easy because you just go up against the split totals.
So you don't think, for example, that the expected performance of the pitcher that you're facing should increase or decrease the expected performance of your hitters in this sort of matchup tool?
Did not follow that question.
So the hitter itself, let's say, for a simple example, hitter's projected to go 300, 400, 500. But sure, he's got splits, he's right-handed, so he goes plus 50 of each against lefties and minus 50 of each against righties.
Sure.
So he's facing all lefties, but some of them are more of the David Price variety, and some of them are more of insert crappy lefty here. You know, the sim.
Oh, it should know, if I'm following that now, it should know which lefties you're facing.
Right.
But and then so should then give you a... then should measure it against the actual platoon split, or you as a score sheet owner can then figure that out.
Right, so the platoon split is going to be set by score sheet. What I'm wondering is, or I guess what I... Maybe it's just a point that I'm trying to make, but there's so much complexity in the prediction around how much you adjust up or down based on the opponent. It's like if you could solve that, you're sort of solving the sim engine in a way. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. If anyone out there wants to solve the score sheet simulation engine, drop us a line. Happy to do it. You know, I think that's another thing about start and sit columns is that they're really only percentage advantages. In most cases, you know, anyone can hit anything over the course of a week.
Right, but, so I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, obviously it's beneficial to have that projected stat line. Is the additional complexity worth the value that it offers, or do you think it's really more just about the ordinal rank of, well, before, and I'm going to steal the guy off your list, Lyle Overbay was probably my 15th best corner infielder / DH generic, and now he's my 11th best or whatever based on, you know, the upcoming week. Do you think it's that simple would be valuable, or you need more detail?
I think it would be valuable. I think it would also be valuable in traditional roto. If somebody knows it, of this tool already, I'd love to see it.
All right, I think I've distracted you enough from actual content.
So tell us why we should start Lyle Overbay.
Yeah, on a Bader, because there's a bet. No, let me tell you a little bit about the right-handed pitchers that Lyle Overbay is going to be seeing in week two. The Milwaukee Brewers are projected right now to face four righties in week two. Kyle Kendrick, Roberto Hernandez, or Fausto Carmona, as we like to call him, Edinson Volquez, and Charlie Morton. The Milwaukee Brewers are also projected to face two lefties in week two, Cliff Lee and Francisco Liriano.
Oh.
Lyle Overbay, who will be facing your righties and not your lefties, is somebody who I would look at making a much more prominent part of your upcoming week's lineup. And conversely, Mark Reynolds is somebody who I would consider moving down the lineup or off, or why is he in your lineup anyway?
That, your only other option is Lyle Overman?
Yeah, I mean, I think any left-handed hitter, it's probably also going to be a pretty good week for
lefties on the Brewers?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be a pretty good week for Scooter Gennett, I think. Although, there are some other issues where Ricky Weeks may just be taking his job away slowly. But if you're looking for a week to... If you're looking for a week to make Scooter Gennett your number, you know, a number six hitter, move him up in the lineup, do so. I also, another value pick. So I also picked Marcus Semien as somebody to start in week two. And here it's a little bit more of a traditional reason that I think is appropriate in Roto as well. He's going to Coors Field. And then he's facing three pitchers in Cleveland, only one of whom is Justin Masterson. So there you go. Braves and White Sox. I think I picked Semien in particular because Jeff Kepinger and Gordon Beckham are both hurt, and the Sox have no other options. So he's going to start all six games. And, not a guarantee, but in Colorado, it's likely that he can at least do pretty well for you. And, again, move him up in your pinch-hitting rotation, move him up in the lineup, or maybe start him over your traditional second baseman. Or shortstop, I'm sorry, this week.
That's fair. And speaking of White Sox, at least former ones, I see you have a pitcher you recommend starting.
Yes. Hector Santiago. Again, I think with pitchers, start and sit is much more based on the matchup. There are a few things we'll get into as the season goes on that are unique to score sheet, particularly luck balancing, and also... I guess balancing of starts throughout the week that you don't really have to worry about in Roto. But here, Hector Santiago is making only one start this week, but it's in Seattle. And Seattle is a team built around one player, Robinson Cano. And so if you're going to throw a hard-throwing lefty at the Seattle Mariners, I think you have a pretty good chance of neutralizing them. And I didn't want to pick the player who's facing the Astros every week. Also, Hector Santiago is about the quality of player where I would say some weeks he could be in your rotation, some weeks he could be out. I don't want to really say, oh, Felix Hernandez is starting this week, at Minute Maid. Because you're starting Felix Hernandez every week. I don't think we're giving you useful advice there. But Santiago would be someone who I would look to move into the roster. And the advantage of score sheet, by the way, is that you can kind of make these week-to-week transactions without really costing your team any. So if you are really roster or lineup focused, just do some of these calculations with your own team.
I mean, especially in a pennant race, if you can pick up an extra win or two over the course of the season just by paying more attention to the matchups, it's got to be worth it.
Yeah. The downside is it's really annoying. But, hopefully we'll give you some leads each week to make it a little easier on you.
Presumably they're doing it because they enjoy it.
Exactly.
Which is why you do it for us.
Welcome.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's move into the sit and talk player to sit and talking about enjoying. You are suggesting sitting the most enjoyable player in baseball. Explain yourself.
The Golden Sombrero himself, Billy Hamilton.
Small sample size.
Billy Hamilton stands in for the Cincinnati Reds, who are all projected to have a relatively rough week next week. Cincinnati, I believe, goes to St. Louis and then comes home and faces Tampa.
Ooh.
So, exactly. You're not facing very many great... you're not going to get a bunch of breaks in that series or during this week. And in particular, Billy Hamilton is going to be up against Yadier Molina, plus, you know, Ryan Hadigan and the Joe Maddon catcher defense crew.
Billy Hamilton has stolen against Yadier Molina.
He has stolen. He's stolen against every Molina. So Yadier and then Jose Molina. He could have a six Molina week.
Oh, man.
Can I just make one diversion here quickly? Did it?
You can make.
Did, was it totally jarring to anyone else to have interleague games on opening day?
I grew used to it. See, I start my season in spring training, and I'm just used to it by now, but it's okay. I was looking at that Philly-Texas game. I thought that was a fun. I wanted to see Tanner Shepard's first start.
It was eventful.
Did not turn into a fun game, that's for sure.
There were lots of things that happened that game.
Yeah. Do we just have to put the countdown clock on Ron Washington right now? Oh, like, man. Does he make it to August? Is that...
So at work, I work in the Office of National Healthcare Reform, and we had a countdown clock counting down to, like, January 1st of this year, because that was when, like, PPACA went into effect. And now that we're past January 1st, the clock is negative. I think the same is true of Ron Washington's counting clock. It's it's gone negative. We are well past the time at which Ron Washington was due to expire.
Yes, but in the meantime... yeah, I think all of your Cincinnati Reds should probably be either rested or moved down if you're really into roster management this week. But Hamilton in particular, I don't know why Hamilton would be starting for your team in general. I think most teams I would just leave him on the bench, but I guess he's fun.
He is
hard to resist. Speaking of fun players who are hard to resist, Drew Stubbs, the guy who Billy Hamilton effectively replaced. I guess it took a couple years, but... yeah, this is one of the weeks where Colorado is on the road, so it's not surprising. They actually play 3 at home, 3 on the road, but the road is at San Fran. And why Drew Stubbs in particular? Well, he's facing Jose Quintana at home, which is not a... You know, it should be an average start for him. And then... he then is, as their lefty hitting specialist, gets to go against Madison Bumgarner in Pac-Bell Park. So, there be dragons. And I don't think, you know, and the bullpen of, or the Giants bullpen at least is pretty strong, so, you know, I don't know if he'll be doing making hay in his pinch hitting opportunities. And in general, I feel like the Colorado Rockies outfield situation needs a chance to clear up. I think nobody is really coming out of that particularly well at the moment. I guess Carlos Gonzalez. But if you have Carlos Gonzalez, you probably tuned us out half an hour ago because you're busy making your score sheet team win. So I have one more player on our sit list, another a pitcher at this time, Ivan Nova. Again, I think he's the kind of player who will start for you most weeks or some weeks. This week he gets two starts at home versus Baltimore versus Boston. I suspect there will be a home run into the right field porch during that game. You know, I don't think either of those matchups are particularly good for him, and I'd give him a rest and probably a lot of the Yankee pitching, which is all... kind of icky, I guess. Is that the technical version?
That is the technical term.
Okay. And that's all I've got. You know, hopefully we'll give you a few names to start and sit every week, and at least, you know, even if you don't have those players, hopefully they'll stand in as proxies for the kinds of decisions that you may want to make in season.
All right. Ian, did you do anything else exciting recently other than watch opening day?
Why, yes, then, I did.
Did it involve sitting on a train for the better part of 8 hours?
No, it involved sitting on a train for the better part of 22 hours.
Oh. Was there no internet access on this train whatsoever? Because someone was not very communicative.
There was no internet access going up. And there was going down, where I became very communicative. but anyway, that's a long way around of saying I went to Montreal this weekend for the start. I wouldn't bring that up here, except there are theoretically people listening to us, and you are also theoretically baseball fans. And I just want to say, give the off-topic conversation about how cool it was to see baseball come back to Montreal. Really one of the better sporting experiences of my life. I feel like that's what baseball should be about. It had an incredible energy. Just to see the anticipation and the amount of excitement. The fans were doing the wave in the first inning, which I realize is probably a mixed.
That's not okay. You're not really selling me on this.
They hadn't done the wave in a very long time. I gave them a break. But, you also saw just an outpouring of support for the team. There were chants of Let's Go Expos. You walked through the metro station and you saw just a drummer. You saw people wearing Expos gear from one end of the train to the other, all the way into the stadium. Chanting Let's Go Expos, you saw a stadium filled with 50,000 people. I thought legit 50,000. It's a city that feels like it deserves baseball again. And it was just really heartening to see that. I'd also say Olympic Stadium, kind of a nightmare stadium, but better than Oakland, better than Tampa. I will hold to that. It gets very loud in there. I think that's something that kind of got lost over the last 20 years. For those of you who are Montreal residents, or for those of you who had been to the stadium in its past incarnation, it's been a long time since it got that loud. And I really, you could really feel the excitement, and you could see Yuppie.
Yuppie.
Yeah, I was okay, but the 1994 team was there, and just seeing that team getting honored, in a way that they deserved a very long time ago, in a way that they deserved perhaps at their 10-year anniversary. I would say I actually got chills when Felipe Alou walked out to support this team that should have won and no longer existed. So, all in all, just really a tremendous baseball experience. I didn't obviously get to experience much of the game from a technical, aspect. Although the Mets look amusing, as always. But, if it ever happens again, I will push for it. I know there were a lot of important reasons why baseball left Montreal, but I think some of that has been fixed, and I wish it was more than just a stalking horse in the future.
And I'd like to thank our podcast correspondent, Jonah Carey, for that report. Thanks, Jonah.
I did read Up, Up, and Away on the way on the 11-hour train ride, so I learned a lot. I learned a lot about Ellis Valentine. it's a rollicking story. There's a sense... does it particularly have to be about the Expos? No, but I mean, it does tell... The Expos are a microcosm of baseball history over the last 50 years, because whatever happened in baseball, the Expos tended to feel the hardest. If it's the drug era, they experienced that the most. In the era of contraction and striking, they experienced that the most. And the expansion in wild years, they experienced the most. And hopefully, now that the money is coming back into the game, they will experience that the most as well. So, yeah, I wish all of you the ability to experience a game like that once or twice in your life. And with that, that's all I've got. Anything from more from your end?
I wouldn't dare follow that up.
Yeah. Happy opening day, everyone.
Woo!
We're back into
opening,
it.
Opening week at this point, right?
Yeah.
We should be a national holiday.
I just
taking off work like everybody else.
Yeah, I'm a little bit angry at Budweiser for co-opting that. Just, you know, let it go, guys. Well, we can make it our own holiday here. We don't need pretext.
Anything to sell more beer.
All right. Well, on that note, let's sell more beer and get out of here. Want to thank everyone.
If Budweiser's listening, we're open to sponsorships. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, 100%. I think we could be the first. We could be the first podcast ever sponsored by Budweiser, despite being a majority non-drinking podcast.
Well, it means you guys can't say anything bad about Budweiser.
No, I have never had a bad experience with Budweiser. Nor as far as I know, it tastes like heaven itself.
Sorry, but I cut you off. Go ahead.
I was just going to end the podcast. All right. Sorry, people.
I have no more terrible beer jokes to make.
Yeah, if you have any terrible beer jokes, feel free to drop us an email. Thank you for listening to the Three Drunk Cubs Scoresheet Baseball Podcast, presented by Baseball Prospectus. If you'd like to ask us a question, or if you have any thoughts on what you'd like to hear going forward, drop us an email at scoresheet@baseballprospectus.com, or follow us on Twitter at TTO Scoresheet. On behalf of Ben Murphy and Jared Weiss, I'm Ian Lefkowitz. Thanks again, and have a great day.
Three true outcomes, they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Three true outcomes, come on out to the ballpark and play. Three true outcomes, Ian, Ben, and Jared. Scoresheet baseball can be tricky if you don't possess the edge. They'll call it the way they see it, you'll rarely hear them hedge. They each possess the knowledge, honed from years of play. You want to win at Scoresheet, you're going to want to stay with Three True Outcomes. They want to entertain you today. Three True Outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Three True Outcomes, come on out to the ballpark and play. Three True Outcomes, the number one independent Scoresheet podcast in the US of A.